Hello and welcome to Misbehave, the podcast where we explore human behaviour in a business context. Season 2 of Misbehave is all about uncovering behavioural patterns which create success in life and business. We're joined by highly driven, accomplished individuals to assess their behavioural patterns and dive into how behaviours have influenced their journey. In this episode, we talk about how to increase the productivity of your meetings. Each year, businesses lose hundreds of days of lost time in unproductive meetings, so it becomes a huge topic when looking at increasing performance and productivity. From how to conduct a meeting audit to the meeting needs of different behaviours, to driving outcome and action, we talk through practical tips and techniques that will instantly increase the efficiency of your meetings. So let's talk about productive meetings. I feel like meetings are like everybody's favourite slash worst subject to talk about.
The thing is, it's like, you have to have them. Yeah. But the one thing everybody complains about not having much of is time.
Yeah.
And you spend a lot of time, if you're not careful, having meetings just for the sake of having meetings.
But you know what it is? I love a meeting now. And I don't know whether it's just because we have become like way more efficient, but actually enjoy them. Whereas I used to just dread it when I would look at my diary and I had a day full of meetings.
Yeah, but I also think if you're conscious about the structure of your meetings and you know that they're purposeful, like our team meetings are super purposeful, and it's also an opportunity, a rare opportunity for us all to get together. So I think that's different. But, and I mean, I love a client meeting. I love getting out and about and seeing people. But you've got to be careful that if you're that way inclined, that you don't just put those in just for a social and a catch up. And actually, you leave the meeting with all the actions that you went in there with and you didn't get the answers for.
And see, on the flip side, because of my high initiation and the achievement piece, I'm like, let's just bring a scorecard in, let's work through the numbers and let's be done in 10 minutes.
Yeah, Laura's classic, honestly, this is the truth. She'd be always looking at how she can shave off time before she's even started. She'll sit down with me, she'll go, well, this will only take 45 minutes when it's in for an hour. And I'm like, we haven't started yet.
There's actually bets in the office, isn't there? It's like a couple of weeks ago I did something and it just was done quicker. And the girls were like, you've done half an hour earlier. How is this possible?
And I was like, yeah, I mean, it's literally a...
Efficiency, that's what it's called.
Okay, well, let's share some of those tips, but also some of those blind spots, Laura Weaving.
So I think the first thing, you know, whenever we go into businesses and we're looking at productivity and performance, one of the first things we look at is meetings and how efficient are they? So starting out doing a bit of a meeting audit... sounds like the most boring thing that you could do, but looking at what meetings do you have and what is the purpose of them? Because I think that's what we've fallen back. I feel like during COVID, people got a lot more purposeful with meetings because when we're all working remotely, you had to be. And I feel like we've seen a bit of a trend of people falling back into just meetings for meetings' sake. You know, we're sat in the same building, let's go and have a meeting. But actually looking at, you know, what are the purpose of each of the different meetings that you have? Standing meetings in particular. We're not talking necessarily here about the odd one-off, but if you've got meetings that are taking up a big chunk of time every week, do they need to be a meeting, right? Could it be an email? Could it be a phone call? Could it be a one-on-one versus five people sat around a table? What is the purpose of those meetings and are they efficient?
And let's also take into consideration the cadence. So how frequent are them and what's the rhythm of those meetings? So ideally, you want the rhythm to be the same. So if it's a reoccurring meeting, sticking to the same time, having the set agenda, and for everybody to know that they're in there regardless and they're not going to get moved. So for example, we have a weekly team meeting. It's in the same time every week and everybody turns up and it's a non-negotiable unless there's a real, you know, a real emergency. But that's a rhythmic cadence. So we know it's in there. And I think that's really important because often... and we're going to get into the behavioural patterns in a sec, but there are certain types of behaviours where you're way more free about moving meetings, but the cadence and the rhythms are something I think people often forget about.
And I think, you know, when we're talking about doing a meeting audit, we're not always talking about reducing meetings because I did a one-on-one last week and we talked about that leader. Often when you become a leader of a team, all of a sudden you've got way more one-on-one meetings. And we were talking about actually, did all of her meetings need to be one-on-one? You know, what could the value have been with maybe a morning team huddle for 10 minutes every morning or three times a week? And often we shy away from group meetings because they do have a tendency to become inefficient. But if you manage a big team and you want to disseminate information quickly and get updates that are relevant to other people, a huddle or bringing the team together for very short periods of time is actually way more productive than doing 10 separate meetings on 10 different things.
And one of the things we've just been looking at personally in our business is the, I think... It was referred to as the meeting soup. It's where you basically mix too many things and too many subjects in one meeting. So people leave with a bit of a mixed up viewpoint of what the actions actually were and was it really relevant? Did we cover off what we needed to? So we're actually in the process of separating out some of the things that we cover in our team meeting and moving them into the daily huddle, the quick update on a morning, so that everybody knows what each other's priorities are. And that's now not covered in our weekly team meeting. And they become way more focused around performance and around KPIs and the goals that we're all working on, so that they're very purposeful. One-to-ones have their place. The well-being check-ins have their place. So we're not just putting everything in the same meeting.
Yeah. If you're curious to know more about your leadership behaviours, click the link in the show notes to get a free leadership DNA profile for a limited time only. So let's talk about prep or no prep, agenda or no agenda. Because I think businesses usually are pretty strict on this when it comes to external meetings. So meetings with clients, you know, often have an agenda. They're way more structured. But often when we get to internal meetings, this slips a little bit. And to be totally honest, the preference for planned, not planned, agenda, no agenda, prep, no prep, will come down to individual behaviours. So it is about thinking about the behaviours in your team.
Well, it's the behaviours of the people who you're going into the meeting with, yeah. Right? So, yeah. And you might not know that if it's a client, so you might have to err on the side of caution or go somewhere in the middle or ask, quite frankly. But often for me, I'll ask the medium if it's an external meeting, what would you prefer? Would you prefer video, in person, a call? Sometimes it's down to schedule, to be fair. But in an internal meeting, I think that agenda piece, if it's a regular meeting and you're turning up and you want people to be prepared or you need them to fill in information in advance of the meeting, then I think prep is actually really critical regardless of your behavioural patterns. I think if you are less procedural and you're more high initiation, so you have that bias for action, so Laura and I, we will very rarely prep much in advance of our own meetings between each other. But to be fair, that works because we're both the same. But if we're working with other members of the team, we then have to almost flex our behaviours to maybe give advance notice of what the meeting's about, to give them more time to prepare so we're not asking them things off the cuff, because we get more out of them in the meetings. But we don't have to do that with each other, which is really interesting because we often say sometimes when we then go into other meetings, if we're not consciously aware of the other people and we focus just on us two, those meetings can be less effective. And you feel it in the room. We get less from people because they're not able to respond off the cuff in the same way as we can with each other.
Yeah. And there's a big behaviour when it comes to this. So often, and this might resonate if you're listening, often we get queries where people will come to us and they'll say, you know, we get in a room and we put a topic on a table and nobody speaks. Or I feel like as the leader or the manager, I speak in this meeting and no one else is contributing.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, sometimes you've got to set expectations, you've got to set boundaries. Sometimes that's just bad behavior. But 9 times out of 10, that is because of a behavior that we call reflective. And it means that people need time to reflect before providing an answer or before inputting. And often that reflection time is longer than is allowed in the actual meeting. So to your point before, you know, when you said about the prep bit, often it's giving people who are more reflective a heads up as to what you're going to talk about and what you expect from them, so that when they walk in, they've had a period of time. And sometimes that period of time is just half an hour, an hour. You know, we're not talking about needing to send out agendas days and days before. Obviously, it depends on what you want to work on. But just sending something out to say, listen, in today's meeting, we're going to talk about X, Y, Z. If you can come to the table having thought about X, then we'll share ideas around the table. You will see instant changes in those meetings and the contribution levels of people just through that pre-preparation. Your high initiation people, which is the opposite of that reflective behaviour, will do that anyway. You know, that's why we can walk into meetings with each other without prep. We're both high initiation. We're driven by action. We are completely comfortable sharing what we think off the cuff. Now, that doesn't mean that if we were running a meeting that required a really complex topic that we didn't know much about, we wouldn't need to go and research it. But initiation people are much more comfortable going, oh, I don't know, what do you think? And just having a dialogue versus people who are more reflective want that time to think first.
And then there's the other piece within the meeting is like, if you have an agenda, it means that you're clear about what you need to cover in that meeting. So if you have to pick up the pace of that meeting, then everybody knows that it's because you need to cover a certain amount of points. So I think sometimes when you're more reflective, you can get stuck in sometimes thinking on one point. And if there's a number of reflective people in the room, you might go round and round in circles discussing the same point, and you end up leaving, covering only one point on the agenda, and the other three have been left and moved, and you have to set up another meeting. I know one of our biggest frustrations is there not being clear actions at the end of a meeting. And it's usually because we will then feel like we've given up an hour of our time or however long it is without any clear actions of what's going to happen. So there's a super useful tool around that. So if you're in a meeting, you should be making time for clear actions at the end and then allocating who's going to do them. And what often happens is you run out of time. So that bit at the end of a meeting gets missed and you end up like shutting shop or people have left because they've got to go to another meeting before you've managed to allocate the actions.
And I think that timekeeping thing, we know, right? Time is your most valuable commodity. It's the thing that we can't get more of. It's that secret sauce that if we could magic more time, we would. So to run effective meetings, you have to keep to time. People need to understand, especially when they're cadenced meetings, like we talked about earlier, where you may be doing them weekly or monthly, people need to get into a rhythm of understanding you are going to finish on time. Because if you don't, it causes, again, if you think about people who are more reflective, who are potentially more procedural, where they've got a really structured day, it causes real anxiety in people when they think that that is going to overrun. Now, we know that there's certain situations where that may happen, but you've got to figure out a way to run meetings to time, to an agenda, to deliver the points that you need to deliver in those times. And going back to that meeting soup thing, that's usually the reason that you go off track. You are trying to squeeze too many things into the timeline. And you actually find when you look around a room that actually 3 or 4 points in your agenda might only be relevant to 2 people. Well, then don't do them in a meeting where there's 5 other people that are sitting there quiet for the other half of it. So it is about being disciplined. And again, there's certain behaviours that do that better. You know, if you are more procedural, you will probably find it easier to run to an agenda to time. If you're somebody where you are more choices and you like to jump around and you don't mind the distraction of somebody throwing a fastball in, you will find that you just get off track. And it's about having the discipline to say, listen, can we pick that up in a different meeting? Today, this is what we're talking about.
Facilitation is actually a real skill. And, you know, we're trained facilitators. It's what we do. When we go in often to businesses, we're facilitating leadership discussions. It's actually more tricky than most people imagine. This, so, you know, we've had that feedback before where people go, can you just come in because we can't facilitate that stuff? For us, it's about reading the room. You've got to look at who's in the room and what you're getting from them. Because if you're getting nothing, to what Laura said earlier, there's usually a reason for that. If one person is monopolizing a conversation in a meeting and you need multiple viewpoints, you need to make sure as a facilitator you're interrupting that. And I mean that in, this could be anything. So even when I'm doing coaching sessions with our team, there is some structure to it. And we make sure we're completing certain areas of discussion. But it's about keeping things on track. On the flip side of that, if you're doing a more informal meeting one-on-one, you need to be able to give the person space to bring things to the table. So you don't want it overstructured so that people feel stifled and they can't maybe bring a discussion topic to you. So this is where you have to use your judgment. I think overall, though, in meetings, it's about making sure that you're looking at creating an agenda where people know what they have to bring. So it's clear about what preparation's required, facilitating it well during it, and at the end, you're closing the meeting down with actions. It's that who, what, when. So who's going to do it, when they're going to do it by, and what are they doing? And looping back on that every meeting so that people know that they're going to be held accountable to do what they've agreed to do.
And that accountability piece is such a huge piece. And that's often where meetings fall down. You know, we'll have a really lovely conversation. That's great. But actually what you're driving out the other end of that, and that's for every meeting. You know, I think often even well-being check-ins or coaching conversations, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, well, so-and-so came into my office and they just needed to vent for an hour. Did they though? Like, how productive was that hour? Because yes, sometimes people do need to vent, but what's the action that's coming out of that? You know, what do they then need to go away and do to solve the issue? And often again, we see this when we kind of class managers in two categories. You've sort of got people managers that have got a lot of the people behaviours where they want to create a really lovely environment, lots of inclusivity. They want people to feel like they can be heard. They want to be supportive. And then you've got managers who are more directional in nature. And while the people managers often get great buy-in, they've built great relationships, sometimes they can go down the track of being too supportive and just letting people come in and vent or take an hour of their time. And they're not actually driving any actions off the back of it. And it's not conducive to you. And it's not conducive to the team member because they're not actually driving any change. So that action bit and the accountability to follow up on, have you done what you said you would do? Again, it will train that discipline into those meetings that actually the efficiency of them goes up exponentially because you're actually driving outcomes off the back of it.
Just to share a little like learning lesson for me, because I struggled. That was a blind spot for me and probably still is, but something I'm much more conscious of. So although I have an open door policy to a degree, but it's come and speak to us. But instead of using the supportive, what's more like more of a supportive method, mm-hmm. It's definitely, you know, we do this step change around less support and more empowerment. And I find like when people come to me with challenges, they almost get a mental timer on how long I'll allow them to vent. And I don't dive into the story with them. I don't add to it. I listen. And then I ask coaching questions around what are they going to do to move forward? How are they going to make change here? So the how and the what questions, the coaching questions. But it's about also empowering them to do something with it. And I think that's it fast tracks the conversation. But if you let someone vent, they basically are re-engaging with something they've probably spent a lot of hours already engaged in. The narrative has already gone in their head over and over and over. And you're then allowing them to relive that again. So sometimes we call it an interruption, but interrupting that and then asking them, what are they going to do to make a change in that? So, you know, we're really good with each other. We kind of, you're allowed like a short period of time to have your whinge. And then it's like, right, what we're doing with it or what are you going to do with it? So that empowerment piece was definitely a game changer for me in my head. It was like, it's not about support, Sarah. It's about empowerment, empowering the other person to take action and go and do something for themselves.
And I think that's really interesting because I have the opposite issue. So when we're talking about that people manager versus more directive manager, you and I sit on different ends. You're more of that people piece. I think for me, I often go into those meetings and I'm so direct on what I want to achieve at the other end of it. We talk about the objectives, we get to the point really quickly. And sometimes I forget that actually there is an aim and an objective there to create connection. And that sometimes people just need to feel connected to you before you dive into the achievement and the direction of where we're going and all of that. So I think, you know, there's pros and cons and blind spots on both sides, regardless of what leadership style you feel like you fit more into. But just bear that in mind when you're running meetings, that actually that will be driving some of that.
Yeah, ultimately you want to have productive meetings and efficient meetings, but also that they're super purposeful, so people want to come to them.
Yeah.
So they know they're going to get something from them, they're going to stay on time, and actually they're going to drive actions moving forward. And there's time for thought, there's time for reflection, there's time for discussion. We got asked a question a little while ago when we were actually running a retreat, and someone said to me, I just want to speak to you ladies. You seem to have it all together and that you're able to. Yeah, I didn't laugh as Laura just have, but they're like, she said, do you have to, in order to run a successful business, you see a lot of things online around people getting up in the 5 o'clock club and doing their juice and their yoga routine and working a lot of hours late into the night. And she said, do you ladies do that? And we were actually, you know what? We have worked really hard over the last few years in some of the stuff we're sharing with you guys on this podcast, but really being more purposeful and intentional with your time. Yeah. So your productivity is high. Now, it doesn't mean we don't work long hours some of the time. And sometimes we do have to flex and bend to depend on what's going on in the business. However, the time we do spend is really intentional. And we also expect that of our team. So the productivity levels are really high. We do a lot with what we've got, but it does require new habits. It does require discipline, as Laura said, and it really requires you to be conscious about this on a daily basis. So one of the reasons we developed the productivity planner was to help people be more productive in the way that they plan their day, but also run their meetings.
And I think a good meeting cadences, good agendas, using things like scorecards, mm-hmm. where you have team members report on weekly KPIs, using things like daily huddles, all of that helps you delegate. And ultimately, we know that for leaders to be able to step out of that, having to work first thing in the morning, having to work late at night, the key to that is good delegation, having good people around you that can do the things so that you don't have to do all of them. And actually, when used correctly, meetings can be a really good source of delegation where you get an overview and you get an insight and you can see what's going on, but you don't need to be in it.
Yeah, you don't need to be doing all the doing or diving into it, for sure. So just for the listeners to think about, really think about when we're talking about some of the things we've talked about. Cadence, are you more reflective? Are you more detailed? Do you like to do agendas? Do you prepare? Do you not prepare? Have a think about where you sit and what are the blind spots for you when you're running meetings, but also some of the members of your team when they're running meetings and you're not part of that. Because this is like, this literally is something you want to think about company-wide, not just for you. If you're maybe the leader in a business or if you're a manager in a business, these tips apply best if you apply them across the whole company.
And you, obviously, you can take the perform profile to be able to find some of this stuff out. But, you know, when you think about the behaviours that we've talked about today, you will spot your reflective people. They will be the people that when you ask a question, they need a moment. They might even sit around a table, look like they've got a blank face. Usually they're just thinking and reflecting. Your initiation people will be the people that jump in. They may even start answering you before you've finished speaking your question. Your detail people are going to be asking for the detail. Your process people are going to be asking for an agenda. They're going to be asking for structure. So you can spot these things in people if you just take a step back and reflect. Where do you sit? Where might you need to flex some of that? And then what do your team need from you? So let's wrap up with some takeaways from today's episode. The first being, it is well worth you doing a meeting audit. And think about things like cadence of meetings, rhythms, timings, purpose. Really look across all of the meetings that you have and think about how efficient they are and whether they need to be in a meeting format or if there's another way that you could disseminate that information. Secondly, be really, really cognizant of accountability and making sure that each of your meetings has a strong action follow-up process and that you're really driving outcomes off the back of them. This whole episode has been about being more conscious of your behaviours, both in how you run meetings and in how you contribute to them. A little practice that we love to do is to give ourselves 5 minutes before we go into a meeting and really think about how we want to show up in that meeting. What is the impact that we want to leave? How do we want people to walk away from the meeting? And go into that really purposeful about what you're going to do when you're in that meeting.
Thank you for listening to Misbehave. Follow us so you don't miss out on other episodes.